You're listening to a University of Minnesota Bookstore author event podcast, recorded live from our location in Kauffman Memorial Union on the U of M's Twin Cities campus. For more information on upcoming author events, please visit our website at bookstore.umn.edu.
Our very special guest today is Anitra Cottledge, and she'll be introduced by Carrie Green. Oh, thank you.
Hello, my name is Carrie Green, and I am a member of the Women's Student Activist Collective, or WSAC, here at the U. Thanks for joining us today in collaboration with the Women's Center for our book event for the new collection of essays, Click, and honoring local writer and feminist Anitra Cottledge. We will be listening to Anitra's essay, possibly some of our own Click stories, and some excerpts from the book. Followed by some questions and conversation about feminism of our generation and on this campus. Before I introduce Anitra, I would like to say a few words about WSAC and the Women's Center. WSAC's mission as an organization is to empower women, transgender, and gender nonconforming people to make positive changes in society by eliminating interrelated inequalities that produce oppression with a focus on gender and sexuality. Well, that's a mouthful. So basically, the way I see it, WSAC is a cool community of people that are really open-minded, dedicated to making the world a safe place for everybody, and has a sweet room upstairs on the second floor. Some fun things we have in the works right now include collaborating with some other groups on the events, such as our Viva La Vulva benefit concert, or our new L Word Wednesdays, where we watched a TV show, The L Word, on Wednesday afternoons in the WSAC room, and we pretend to do our homework. You're all invited. We are also part of the Chop from the Top Coalition, and to fight against the tuition hikes and staff and faculty pay cuts. If you're interested in getting involved with WSAC, we'll send around a listserv sign-up sheet, and or you can just come and hang out with us upstairs. So, we have our meetings on Fridays at 4 o'clock, and we have various committees that meet at different times, but Fridays at 4 are our main meetings. So, another cool thing about WSAC is a strong relationship with the Women's Center, like through our intergenerational knitting group, Bufandas by Yolanda, and in co-sponsoring this event. So Bufandas by Yolanda meets at, I think on Fridays at 12, is that right? So you're welcome to come to that. And the Women's Center is a unit of the Office for Equity and Diversity and is focused on advancing equity for women students, staff, faculty, and alumni across identities. The Women's Center offers educational and leadership resources for women such as grants, scholarships, lectures and discussion, study spaces, internship opportunities, and more. Also, check out their Feisty Femmes blog, a virtual community of undergraduate and graduate students. I checked it out. It's really cool. So, and Anitra Cottledge is the assistant director of the Women's Center here at the U and was recently featured in the new essay compilation, Click, which features writing about particular moments in people's lives when they realized they were a feminist. Gloria Steinem describes the collection as diverse, touching, and entertaining, and the subjects range from ADHD, fishnet tights, eating disorders, engineering school, and hunting. The diversity is reflected in some of the names of the essays, such as Cross Stitch and Soap Operas Following Football, God, Sex, and Pythagoras, I Was Not Aborted and Further Miscellanea, The Brown Girl's Guide to Labels, and other such exciting essays. Like Anitra's, You Are What You Wear. To introduce Anitra, she was born and raised in Detroit and left that part of the Midwest to pursue her education in another part of the Midwest. She earned her master's from the University of Minnesota in educational policy and administration with a research focus on women of color in higher education, administrative leadership. As the assistant director of the Women's Center, Cottledge is both professionally and personally invested in addressing the intersections of race, gender, class, and other identities. She gets fired up and will happily take up conversations with anyone about why we still need campus women's centers and why even the most dedicated activists need to go home at the end of the day and why feminism is everybody's issue. In her free time, she reads and writes voraciously, researches her family tree, and dreams of taking salsa lessons. Please welcome Anitra to the podium to read her essay.
Okay, before I start, I just want to say thanks to the bookstore for hosting this event and for WSAC for bringing the idea to my attention. It's really for the love of WSAC that I'm doing this because my own boss asked me if I wanted to do this and I was like, no, I don't really want the attention, blah, 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 but it's, I mean, I love the Women's Center. My posse is all here, so thank you all for coming. And, you know, but just, you know, it was Grace. Grace asked me to do it, and it all seemed to work. So thank you to WSAC for coming to me with this idea and being interested enough in my essay to have me read it to a group of people. This is the first time I'm reading my essay, so this is kind of cool to look out and see pretty much all people that I know. For the most part. But for those of you who I don't know, it's a small enough group where you could probably get to know me afterwards. So, like Carrie said, my essay is called You Are What You Wear. The year was 1997. It had been a little less than a year since I stood in my dorm room with my friends and watched the news about Tupac getting shot. Biggie still had more money, more problems months after his death. OJ had been acquitted a couple years back, and a woman could luckily, and I do mean luckily, still find a nice shoe with a chunky heel. None of this stiletto business that we have going on now. I was a sophomore in college at a predominantly white university, hundreds of miles away from home, and I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out of a couple of different closets. One of my closets, the one with the big F on the door, felt roomy and cramped all at the same time, like a loft space with books and CDs stacked in every available nook. It was 1997, and I was struggling with so many things. Should I double major in journalism and English? Who drank the last squidge of my apple juice? What should I do about this whole feminism thing? The dilemma as I saw it, it's one thing to be a feminist. It's a whole different kettle of fish to broadcast your feminist tendencies to the rest of the world. That's why, even though I loved volunteering at my campus women's center, even though that experience is the foundation for much of the work I do today, I honestly didn't want to wear my Mizzou feminism t-shirt where just anyone could see it. And by anyone, I mean the other black students in the food court, in the dorms, or in my classes. Somehow I feared that if I proclaimed my feminism in the presence of other black folks, they would assume I was a lesbian, even though I was, who hated men. I didn't. As if being a lesbian wasn't enough, being accused of being into some white shit like feminism would mean... would mean even further isolation from the other people who looked like me. If I wore that t-shirt around my peers, I feared I would be called out, and I just wasn't confident at that point in my ability to defend myself or my feminism. When I finally gathered the courage to wear the shirt in public my junior year, it was a moment for me, capital A, capital M. I don't think it was necessarily the moment when I realized I was a feminist. No, I had a different kind of click moment. Instead, it was one of the moments when I began to claim my burgeoning feminism. I started to contemplate what feminism could mean for me and the way that I thought about belonging and community. I hadn't yet discovered bell hooks, Audre Lorde, or Patricia Hill Collins, and I had no language to talk about feminism. What I understood, what I wanted, was a place to belong as I was sorting out who I was. In the ways that all of my identities, black, woman, lesbian, nerd, working class, could coexist. Finally being able to wear a t-shirt that labeled me as a feminist was probably the beginning of my struggle to integrate all of those identities into a whole that made sense for me. But I'm getting ahead of myself and using language that's familiar to me now, but meant nothing to me then. In retrospect, I had been women-centered for a long time. In a way that was apart from my gender or sexual orientation, women were the suns in my life, and everything else was just a satellite. No disrespect to the men in my family, but even then it was clear to me that the women were the ones who kept the family rotating on its axis. My paternal grandmother was, and still is, the matriarch. I could talk to my mother about almost anything. And my aunt was my role model for pushing beyond the familiar. I credit my aunt with being the person who showed me another world was alive beyond my hometown. It was because of her that I knew what it was like to feel slightly out of breath from the thin air on Pike's Peak. Because of my aunt, I tried new food. Oh my God, what is pad thai? When I was still a teenager. All of those new experiences became my template for opening myself up to interesting and unfamiliar ideas and experiences I previously hadn't given myself permission to envision. For better or for worse, the conversations in my family were often initiated by the women, dominated by the women, and the decisions were made by the women. The women were the power brokers. Because of this dynamic, I knew down to the marrow in my bones that being a woman mattered. It had weight. I can't remember exactly what led me to the campus women's center, but I think I was subconsciously searching for another place where I could matter, a safe haven. I found the safe haven before I found feminism proper. Gloria Steinem and the mythical bra burning weren't even blips on my radar when I found a group of welcoming, quirky, funky women who were just doing their thing. Straight, lesbian, bi, with piercings and tattoos, rail thin, full figure, this was a tribe of women who brought in videos of their childbirth experiences, who had heated conversations about body image, who curled up on the couches and watched Say Anything as a group, and talked about how awesome Lloyd Dobler was, no matter what their orientation was. I helped out with the center library and soaked it all up, the discussions, the women, the energy. I stumbled upon books like Unbearable Weight and the Feminine Mystique. For a young woman from Detroit who had spent a lifetime feeling like a nerd, I was, still am, and an outcast, it was such a relief to feel like I could just be. I did, however, notice that I was one of few Black women, or women of color in general, that frequented the center or worked there. I had no idea then that this was old news in feminist communities. I was completely unaware of the animosity that existed between some women of color and white women in the feminist movement. The lack of melanin told me that something was wrong, though. If there weren't many Black women jumping on the women's center slash feminist bandwagon, that meant I couldn't talk about it with other Black people. I couldn't be that. None of my other Black friends talked about it. None of them were feminists, or at least the rest of them were hiding like I was. So I became afraid, terrified really, to talk about the issues that I was starting to care so much about, and of the increasing amount of time I was spending in the women's center. Wear my Mizzou feminism shirt out and about? Forget it. Something else was also taking shape around that time, anger. I felt rage like I had never before experienced. To this day, I call my sophomore and junior years my militant days. I remember wanting to just smack everybody, most especially the white people who seemed to feel entitled to everything, even the space on the sidewalk. Some moments were more blatant than others. A car full of white guys rolling around the bend and a voice yelling out the N-word, drive-by racism. Some were more subtle. White women in women's studies classes posed questions like, which came first, racism or the patriarchy? Because it's so easy to choose, of course. The white women weren't the only ones who believed it was simple to choose. I was angry at the Black folks, too, for what I perceived as their collective closed-mindedness, for their insistence, too, that I choose which identity was more important, being Black or being a woman. This absence of the Black feminist experience was everywhere, including the classroom. I had gotten my hands on Bell Hooks and To Be Real by Rebecca Walker by then, and I was on the warpath. I was angry that nobody was talking about my experience. I was furious that there was barely any women of color featured in my women's literature class, and that the professor had the nerve to spell Audre Lorde's name wrong. Audrey was my hero by then, and it was sacrilege as far as I was concerned not to take the time to spell her name right and recognize her contributions to the feminist canon. Sacrilege. I even had another English professor who didn't even know that Gwendolyn Brooks had died. I was so tired of Virginia Woolf and Anne Sexton and blah, blah, blah. So I said, fuck this, and built my own curriculum. Black Macho and the Myth of the Superwoman? Check. Black Feminist Thought? Got it. This Bridge Called My Back? Yes. I discovered a whole new universe inside of Alice Walker's In Search of Our Mother's Gardens. I cast off feminism for the richer mantle of womanism for a while. Consistent with the tricky nature of memory, I don't know what particular passage from what specific book, what special moment changed things for me. I didn't write down in my journal the exact day I started wearing the Mizzou feminism shirt to the bookstore, to class, to the dining hall, and consequences be damned. I just know that it was sometime in those angry, questioning days when wearing the shirt became secondary to finding and shaping a feminism that fit who I was and reflected back to me my experiences and the experiences of the women in my family and the women that I knew. As I started to discover the various feminisms, wearing the Mizzou feminism shirt became an act of defiance. It was open challenge. I dare you to tell me that this word, this movement doesn't belong to me. That challenge has been the value that stayed with me throughout my journey to integrate my identities. Black woman, lesbian, nerd, feminist, among other things. I don't get it right sometimes. On some days, I still feel like puzzle pieces, fragmented. And there are moments when I do choose, when some identities are more present than others, but not to the point of denial. I'm not sure highlighting one identity over another in any given moment is a bad thing. I've learned that it can, at times, be a survival tactic. Sometimes when I'm sitting in the beauty shop, my all-black beauty salon, where there is a lot of Christian talk and no shortage of scripture quoting, somebody brings up the gay thing. I think to myself, okay, what is this going to turn into? Will I need to say something? Will I need to come out to these people? Should I? Usually, the conversation ends up being pretty innocuous, but it is one of those moments when I question the safety of challenging homophobia in a place where I am in community with other black and presumably straight women. Should I be a black woman right now or be the black lesbian? These days, I work in a campus women's center, and I present workshops and facilitate discussions about feminism to students who are the same age I was when I started this process. The F word is still taboo and dirty and shunned, like it's the plague, not always for the same reasons I shied away from it, but sometimes for exactly the same reasons. I don't shove it down their allegedly post-feminist throats because I remember what it was like to be insecure and thinking that feminism was static. Sometimes I dress it up in the terms that students seem to be more comfortable with. Diversity, equity, social justice. Arose by any other name, right? My feminism isn't caught up in semantics 24/7. But I do own my feminism. I have learned to challenge people who either directly or passive-aggressively try to convince me or dictate to me what movements belong to me. I do honestly tell folks what I think about the feminist movement, capital M, the things I love about feminism, such as its incredible potential to include so many voices, and the things that frankly make me want to jump out of a window, like the rigidity and the exclusion that occurs when feminists don't realize that potential. There are some moments when I'm so done with feminism. I'm so over the WIFAs, the white, well-intentioned feminists of America who do not want to own their privilege. I have those moments when I simply cannot support the notion that Girls Gone Wild represents a new brand of feminism and liberation. Holler back, feminism, I want no part of you. And then I'm back to being a womanist, or a black feminist, or just me. But then I inevitably have an incredibly insightful discussion with my female friends, or I receive positive feedback from someone who received help or guidance about an issue from my office, and then I realize why I sometimes call myself a feminist. More important, I realize why I care about this work. I remind myself that for me, feminism has always been about choice. It's about being able to choose what to call yourself, what to wear, what issues to take up, what battles to fight. What kind of feminist or womanist or person would I be if I didn't at least respect someone's choice to locate themselves within feminism in a way that feels comfortable for them? Allowing everyone the space to experience their own unique click moment, that's the first step in creating that feeling of freedom and community, that same sense of belonging that I experienced in my own family and in my campus women's center over a decade ago. Thanks.
To ask any questions about Anitra's essay, this would be a great time for that. I know I have a couple, but if anyone wants to get started right away, feel free. So, one thing I was wondering was that is this essay, like, is it easy for you to read this, and was it easy for you to write it, or like, how does that feel to share your story?
Hmm. Yeah, that is a good question. Was it easy to write? Yes and no. I mean, so when I first started writing it, I had lots of things that I wanted to write about. And then you realize that you have a word limit and you have to conform to that word limit. And so, you know, you start editing the pieces that, you know, just can't fit in there. So I love talking about feminism. So in that sense, it was just like, okay, I have about 1,900,000 kachillion things to say about this, and which ones do I pick? And then when I started really getting into, I guess, the meat of it, there are parts of it that were hard because it's really familiar because you're talking about yourself. I'm talking about myself and something that happened to me and something that I went through. But then, you know, that was like 1997. You know, there I was with my chunky heels and, you know, who remembered what else went on except my roommate stole my apple juice. So, you know, so it's kind of, I think, difficult to sort of piece together, like, okay, what is the most authentic? So sometimes that can be hard, but writing about feminism is like bread and butter, so it's all good. In terms of sharing my story, it does feel a little weird. I think if I had to pick a venue to read out loud for the first time, this is a good one because I know the people here and it's small and very intimate, and so I don't feel really nervous at all. But it is weird to kind of think, oh, he's podcasting that over here. Oh my God, someone on iTunes is just going to be able to boop, you know. And so, you know, what if somebody that I didn't even remember, some friend or like family member that I'm not even close to reads this and is like, oh yeah, I didn't know all that about you. And so it's kind of weird to have that floating around out in the ether. But I do think it's important enough to, it was an important enough, I guess, tell for me to tell that I could get over that piece. Yeah.
Is there, you said you had to cut a lot out, is there anything in particular that was really hard for you to cut out?
And when's the book coming out?
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to, I think, talk about, I'm really passionate in general about feminism, not, and women's centers, and the people in the women's center staff have heard me say this, I'm really passionate about feminism not just being, we're all like white middle class lesbians with short hair, like burning bras, which that only happened like one time, but okay, and that just caught on. I'm really, I think, passionate about feminism becoming more accessible to a lot of different types of people, not just women. So I think, you know, I always write more and then have to edit down even when I'm writing for school or something like that. So there were just all these moments where I was like, oh, but I want to write about that one time that I got into the argument with the girl and how that was significant and blah, 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 blah. So I could probably come up with more than one click moment. And so it was a little hard to figure out which was going to be the moment that I really honed in on for the purposes of the essay. But as far as when the book's coming out, I don't know. I mean, you know, I have to talk with my boss about that and, you know, what my workload is like and do I have time to write a book on the side, you know? So we'll work that out, but yeah.
Between feminism and working at the Women's Center, I can imagine things get really intense. What do you do for self-care?
That is a good question. And of course, everyone in my staff is laughing because I'm usually the person that is telling people, you need to leave, you need to go home. Because I do think we've been kind of set up, any of us who are activists or working towards social justice, I think we get this idea that social justice means working for $3 a day and you have one shirt and you like live on a pallet or something. And I'm not saying that we have to be living large, you know, in a mansion somewhere, but, you know, who wants to live like that? And plus, you know, we could talk about issues of privilege when framing social justice that way. But for self-care, what do I do? I'm a Buddhist, so I meditate a lot. So that's a big thing for me. I like walks, and writing for me is huge. So in that sense, writing this essay was good because that's usually how I process a lot of things, by writing. I mean, those would be the main things. I mean, you know, there's always things like video games and, you know, kicking the crap out of virtual characters that aren't real. So, you know, a lot of things, but I do really feel like, yeah, you can be dedicated, but you still have to leave because the work is always there. The work is always going to be, it's always going to evolve into something else, and you can't do the work if you're in a coma or you're dead. So go on vacations, get massages. I do all of those. So,
yeah. Why do you think, I mean, at this point, and I find myself like telling people that I'm a feminist, there's so much negative reaction still to it, especially I find among young women. They like, all the principles are there, but they don't want to name it feminism.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I mean, I think we also talk about this a lot in our office. I think the image that feminism has gotten over the years is just sort of stuck. And I think we're in this place where, sure, we know lots of feminists who are not like the feminists that the feminist of stereotype, but yet somehow that doesn't make it to the magazine or whatever. The other thing I was going to say was, I think sometimes I think people think there's no need for it anymore. So, which is something we were just talking about today in the office of, you know, we get the question a lot. Well, why do we even need your office now? Like, what do? Why do you exist? Why are they paying you? I mean, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we actually have a sheet, and I wish that I had brought it, about why we still need women's centers and, by extension, feminism. And the thing that always gets them is pay equity. And when you start talking about pay equity, because it's something that everybody's going to have a job at some point, you know, it's not like some special interest or agenda. I mean, a job is like a job. And so when you start talking about the whole seven women making 78 cents on for every dollar that a man makes, and that's white women, and then it's even less for women of color, people are just floored. I mean, I had a conversation with a first year student, and I told her this, and she's like, wait, what? We don't make the same amount of money as, I mean, she just literally didn't know. And I'm not judging her for not knowing, but a big part of the job that we do is saying, here's the deal. And so I think sometimes people don't want to associate themselves with feminism because they see it as sort of obsolete. And so, or that they see feminism as this thing of big gestures. I did a march, I did a protest, I burned something, you know, I did a sit-in, which is cool. But then people are also doing these other things that may be smaller or very localized that are also feminism. And I think that people don't see enough of that being associated with feminism. So, you know, anything I think we could do to make sure those things are seen in conjunction with each other are always good. Other questions?
I've got one more.
Go ahead.
What is it about this particular collection of essays that, is there something about it that you really like? And I actually would love to know how you got connected with the author or the editors as well.
Sure.
To the first, what do I like about it? I like that it's so different. And so it's kind of weird to, you submit your own essay and so you have no idea who the rest of these people are that are going to be in the anthology with you. And so when you see it and you get to read it, I mean, it's just kind of fascinating to see, like, you know, just the different angles that people are approaching feminism with, and what were their click moments. And is it fishnet stockings? Is it engineering? Is it, you know, are they talking about abortion? Are they talking about women of color? You know, what are they talking about? And so I think that's pretty fun. And that there's a lot of seriousness, but also a lot of humor, which I tend to like a nice combination of seriousness and humor. I like that a lot of them are relatable, that there are these little moments that are pulled out of someone's life that a lot of people could read that and be like, oh yeah, that happened in my church too. Or yeah, I have those same exact fishnets, you know, I don't know. But they're accessible moments. And I think that was kind of the point, at least from my conversations with the editors, that they wanted it to be something that anyone, but particularly young women under 30 or 35, could pick up and be like, okay, I see myself in this, or I could see myself having this moment, or I could see myself maybe even creating a space where this moment can happen for someone else. How did I get connected? Actually, I just saw it on Feministing. So they had an open call for submissions. I really do encourage people that if you are interested in writing, they always have these like floating calls for submission on places like Feministing. So do check that out, feministing.com. But I also knew Courtney Martin, one of the authors. And we had brought her for our first Discover Exceptional Women's Week. And actually, I met her before then, and we've just kept in touch. And at the time, I don't even think I knew that she was a part of this. But I just thought, oh, this is really cool. So, and I really do think quite highly of her. And it was like, oh, when I did find out that she was attached to the project, I was like, yay, Courtney. So, you know, just my own interest in wanting to write about feminism from a woman of color perspective, and also supporting a project that she was a part of was part of it. But I really did just stumble across it on one day on Feministing. So, yeah.
Other questions? Well, thank you, Anitra.
Yeah, cool, thank you.
Yeah. Next, I'm just going to read just another excerpt from the collection so we can hear just a little bit more about what you can find in this great book. And then I would like to, after I do that, I'll invite Amy up, and she has volunteered to share a little bit about her click, or a click moment for her for feminism. So I'll just pick one of these that I flagged, and we'll see what happens. Okay, so this particular excerpt is from one of the editor's essays in this book, and it's called Word and Deed by J. Courtney Sullivan, and I'll just be, it's from the middle of it, but you can kind of catch on, so. All right, here we go. In middle school, the word feminism was just beginning to make its way into my consciousness. Like a lot of women from her generation, meaning her mother, and mine, even though my mother embodied what it meant to be a feminist, she never called herself one. If anything, she grew embarrassed and self-conscious when I tried to engage her in a conversation about what it meant to be an independent, professionally successful woman like her, as if I were really just criticizing her for being lousy on the home front. She came from a no-frills, working-class family. She was the first one of them to go to college. She seemed to think that there was something negative or self-indulgent about calling oneself a feminist. She once told me, only half-joking, that the women's movement might be just a ploy to get females to do more work, both at the office and around the house. Maybe that's when I began to realize that despite the pretty silk scarves and exciting work stories, my mother was just overwhelmed. She seemed to suspect that feminism, if it applied to her at all, was part of what had gotten her into this jam in the first place. All right, and then I'm going to skip to later in the essay. I began to see that the members of our family, my mother most of all, were victims of a culture that devalues caretaking in the home, while at the same time fetishizing it, making domesticity synonymous with love and the ability to control, allowing women to make inroads professionally, but punishing them if they cannot, as they say, have it all, by which they, of course, mean do it all. Those other mothers in my neighborhood, with their brownies and their wreath-making and their long, dull days in the house, were no doubt victims of this, too. That same, please allow me to use the P-word here, patriarchal culture benefited every time a razor-sharp, ambitious, incredible woman like my mother decided she wasn't a feminist, because that decision left her isolated and disenfranchised instead of empowered, connected, and pissed off. All right, that's what I'll read from that one. So just an interesting perspective, and I thought that was quite applicable to our conversation about the feminist label, or whatever that means. All right, so next I'm going to introduce Amy Wozlewick, and she's a graduate student in the master's program here, Masters of Public Policy at the Humphrey Institute. As an undergrad, she spent 2 years at St. Olaf College before transferring to the U of M, where she was a volunteer with the Aurora Center and a member of WSAC. Her academic interests include social policy, women in leadership, and sexual and domestic violence. She plans on running for public office in the near future. So welcome, Amy. Thanks so much for volunteering to talk.
All right. Hi, everyone. I don't have anything written down, so this is kind of informal and short, but how many people here have seen the Vagina Monologues? Raise, show of hands. Okay, so good number of you. I started at St. Olaf, and as a freshman there, I was in a dorm with a floor of just amazing young women, and this group of amazing young women and I decided in the spring of my freshman year that we were going to the Vagina Monologues. None of us really had any idea what we were getting into. None of us really knew much about it. I think we kind of did a little bit of searching on the internet about it and found out some things, and it sounded interesting, so we decided to go. And it was definitely an interesting experience. I'll say interesting. I don't think I've heard the word vagina that many times ever in one place, at one event, but it was really interesting. I think the most powerful part for me, and the part that I share with people whenever I'm talking about running for office, changing policy, sexual and domestic violence, is at the end of the particular performance that I was at, one of the performers asked if any of us had personally experienced sexual or domestic violence to stand, or if we knew anyone who had experienced sexual and domestic violence. And this was, it was a fairly small space that we were in, but pretty much everybody in the entire space was standing by the end, by the time they had asked those questions. And for me, I don't remember if I was standing, but for me, I know I looked around and I was in shock. I mean, I didn't really understand the whole, how big of an issue domestic and sexual violence were. So for me, that was kind of the jumping point for me was looking around and just seeing how big of an issue it was, and that was primarily affecting women and children. And so for me, I left the performance and I had so much that I wanted to talk about and so much that I was interested in, and I went back with my amazing group of young female friends, and we went back to our dorm, and I actually sat with one of my friends and talked for hours and hours and hours about things that we had learned in the performance and just things in general that we noticed as young women, and you know, things that we noticed through school and things that we noticed in college. And for me, I think maybe not the next day, but within the week, I decided that I wanted to be a women's studies major, and so I decided to be a double major in psychology and women's studies, and kind of came to that decision, actually, which is kind of funny because it's a big decision. I went to my dorm room and looked at my bookshelf, and I had maybe 7 books, and like half of them were psych-related and half of them were women's studies-related. So that was where I went. And I think that I definitely was, you know, I've been a feminist before that, but I just didn't realize what it meant or what it was or what I could do, where my interests were in feminism in general. And I definitely, as time passed, I realized, first of all, that, and sorry for anybody who's an Ole or former Ole, but St. Olaf was not the place that I wanted to be in terms of feminist activism. We had a very small feminist group on campus, and I wanted more, and I wanted more diversity and more people in general who were interested in what I was interested in. Came to the University of Minnesota and started to become a little more vocal and open about the fact that I was a feminist, and also that I had these issues that I really cared about. Started volunteering at the Aurora Center, joined WSAC my senior year, and it was awesome to be among people who, even with varied interests within feminism, just among people who cared and people who had the same viewpoints that I could talk about these things with and didn't think I was crazy or didn't think that I was just using the knowledge I had learned in, like, academic knowledge to say these big things that nobody really understood. So for me, it definitely, I think that I've had conversations with family members, and it's really interesting to me to talk about feminism and talk about the word feminist and what it means to people, and just as everyone has said, just what it means and the crazy things that it means and really not what it means. I mean, just being in WSAC, I've met a lot of amazing people who don't fit into any box. And I think that that's the thing that is definitely important with feminism, is to realize that we have common goals and common interests, but we're not all the same, you know, and we have to realize that that is what's going on. I guess one interesting thing that I want to share is a personal story, kind of a personal story of mine. I talked to my mom one day. My mom, who I never really knew was interested in feminism or anything or active at all when she was younger, but we had a conversation one day, and she was telling me that she was pretty active when she was younger. Obviously, I did not know my mom when she was younger. I was not around, but she told me that, and I thought it was really interesting that she told me that she, in terms of why we still need feminism, my mom said to me, "I am tired of doing the work. I did it when I was younger." And she's like, and a lot of it has not changed, and there's still things that need to be changed and people that need to do it. But at the point, you know, where in my mom's life where she's right now, she thinks that it's time to turn it over to other people. And me being one of those people my age. And I think it's time to, I guess, pass the torch, take the torch maybe is more appropriate. And for people to understand that just because it's feminism doesn't mean that all we're concerned about is women and getting more rights and all this kind of thing. I've been involved with a group called Min Cafe Coalition for about a year now, kind of taking a break here as I'm in graduate school. But the top three things that we focus on, and Min Cafe is definitely like full of awesome, amazing people, feminists. And the thing that we really focus on, the three things are pay equity, which is a huge thing. When you tell people that they're not making as much money as someone else, they tend to get a little upset, especially if they're doing, you know, when they're doing the same exact work or more work. Sexual and domestic violence, which is one of my big interests, talking about just the how gendered it is, how gendered domestic and sexual violence is, and how feminism and equal rights and that kind of stuff plays into that type of violence. And then lastly, we talk about, and this is really, I don't know anything about this, but equality in courts. So the mess this up. So there's a standard by which they judge court cases. And right now, gender is not at the same level as a lot of those. So like race, religion, that kind of stuff. It's not the same level. So when they look at a court case, there's not necessarily a precedent for how to deal with gender discrimination, I guess is my basic understanding of it. So what this is coming back to is I started out as a college student who really knew nothing about feminism, took one really powerful experience for me to become engaged and involved. And it's definitely not something that I'm just going to sidetrack because of the label. And it's definitely not something that I am going to not claim because of what it might mean to some people. And I think that when people meet a feminist, someone who calls themselves a feminist, and when they meet a group of them, I think it's really powerful because you can see that just the people among the people sitting here that we are all very different. And like I said, we don't fit into boxes. And it's really important for people to realize that that's just not the case.
Well, thank you. Anybody wanted to ask questions? Amy, I know, I'd love to answer.
Yes.
Amy, in the intro, Carrie mentioned that you are planning on running for public office.
I am planning on running for public office, yes.
Can you share a little more about your plans with that?
Well, it's definitely going to be after graduate school, but I'm trying to get really kind of sideways involved in it right now by doing stuff with my neighborhood association, and Minneapolis has board and commission positions opening up. Really what I want to do is it's inclusive of ideas of feminism. I wouldn't say that I'm going to run on like a feminist platform, but I really don't like politicians. Again, it's a thing where they have a label and everybody thinks that all politicians are like this or like that, but I don't like how politics works, and I don't like a lot of what's going on in politics these days. Just went to a forum earlier today on redistricting, and they talked about how everything is super partisan now, and nothing gets done, and people don't like each other, and it's really not productive. And so I want to bring a different perspective to things, especially a perspective that includes more people. So I sound like I'm making a stump speech. My big thing really is I'm really into the idea of, as a representative of the people, of representing the people who don't vote. Okay, so this doesn't make sense, but what I'm thinking is people who have the resources to vote don't, you know, they're not necessarily looking for things that are really super important. So for example, when I ride the tube quite often, I ride the tube and I ride back to my house and I sit on the tube and I ride it the whole way. So I'm like seeing everything that's going on the bus and looking around and seeing people who I know probably do not feel a connection to the system in order that they're going to go out and vote. And so for me, it's about representing those people and talking to those people and bringing not only feminist ideas into it in terms of who we talk to and what our issues are, but also just the idea of a social justice perspective too for me. And yeah, that's pretty much what I want. And we need more women in leadership. I mean, that's a big part of it as well. I know that the Center on Women in Public Policy and the Minnesota Women's Foundation just released a report that everybody should read that I think I should give to every single legislator and say, what are you doing about this? Because they break it down in terms of inequities in the state. And a huge part of that is women in leadership, not only in government, but also in business and nonprofits and things like that. So it's definitely a case where there's a whole bunch of women out there. I went to a training by the White House Project who want to run. We need you, and we want you, and you should do it. Any other questions?
Thank you, Amy. Thanks so much, Amy.
Well, I would certainly welcome if anyone here is inspired to step up and just talk a little bit about their own experiences, just let me know. And we can definitely, we'd love to hear. Other than that, I think I'll read another excerpt. And if we want to continue discussion, that's great. If we want to wrap it up, that's great too. So just because Amy was talking about boxes, this seems very topical. So this is from Jordan Berg Powers' essay, Cross-Stitch and Soap Operas Following Football. And yeah, here we go. This is toward the end of the essay. He's wrapping it up. And when you put one gender into a box, you create a companion box for the other gender. So while women suffer disproportionately, men are also cheated by the boxes they have to fit into. Boxes that tell us that we need to be strong by being cold and obtuse, domineering and thoughtless in our relationships with women, unable to understand the complexity of feelings, let alone have them. Society dictates that men are to be no more than animalistic simpletons. The bigger we are, the less evolved we must be, an assumption that, as a large black man, I know all too well. It is at that intersection of privilege and oppression that feminism helped to clarify my once obfuscated view of the world, enabling me to deconstruct the injustices around me and take off the blinders we're all taught to wear. That was my true click moment, the moment I connected the boxes. We recreate these boxes subtly and unconsciously. We are all recovering sexists, former vice presidential candidate Rosa Clemente once said. Women and men, comedians and my mother, were all complicit in recreating the oppressive patriarchal society. All right, I think I'll wrap that one up there. All right, so is anyone by chance interested in coming up and speaking at all? Any more? Okay. Well, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you want to continue discussion? Do you want to wrap it up?
I think I want
Anita
to sign a book for me.
I think I feel the same way. Well, thanks so much for coming, you guys. Wonderful discussion. Wonderful readings. Thank you so much, Anitra. Thank you to the Women's Center for working with us here. And we'll hope to see you. Oh, and Amy, thank you so much for reading or for talking to us about your experiences. So come check us out, WSAC, up on the second floor. And check out the Women's Center in Appleby. Cool places. So thanks so much for coming.